The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, 29th day of February, 2012. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow down 34 points, S&P down 2.5, comp off by 4, and the big story, gold down $60, silver down 2 bucks, also known as Bernanke made a boo-boo. Good afternoon, Michael. Hey, Michael's not with us yet, or has on his wrong headset. We do have a very special guest today, so I'm going to move quickly. And we got to talk about this really quick. As you know, Bernanke has been testifying all morning. He is testifying as we speak. Quoting some headlines, he's had an interesting morning on Capitol Hill, facing the ire of Ron Paul and receiving Democratic praise from Barney Frank. Bernanke was testifying before the Committee on Financial Services, where he said the economic recovery continues but remains frail. Then he was put on the spot by Ron Paul, who pulled out a silver eagle and accused him of debasing the currency and destroying America's wealth. Ron Paul was in full campaign mode, so was Barney Frank, and Bernanke somehow was caught in the middle. In what was supposed to be a Q&A session, the Fed chief essentially sat down and listened to one side bash him while the other side loved him. Barney Frank took the floor after some softballs by committee chairman Spencer Baucus, praising Bernanke's tenure as Fed chairman and pointing to continued job growth. It was Ron Paul, though, who took the day in what is usually the most heated and interesting exchange of Bernanke's excursions to Congress. The Fed chairman was forced to sit down and listen as Ron Paul scolded him for debasing the currency and destroying the wealth of millions of Americans. Ron Paul first asked Bernanke if he did his own grocery shopping, to which the Fed chairman responded, yes. Paul immediately cut him off and said no one believes the 2% inflation rate. He claimed it was actually closer to 9%. Someone is stealing wealth, said Ron Paul, in full campaign mode. He then pulled out a silver eagle, a silver coin that has nominal face value of $1 that is, in fact, legal tender. Ron Paul told Bernanke that in 2006, as he took the top spot at the Federal Reserve, an ounce of silver bought 4 gallons of gas. Today, said Paul, it buys about 11. That's preservation of value, yelled an excited Ron Paul, before accusing Bernanke of loving paper money and begging him to legalize competing currencies. Bernanke responded by explaining that anyone can hold whatever currency they want, and told Paul he'd gladly help him figure out how to hold euros, yen, or whatever else he pleases. Paul once again lashed out, telling Bernanke, the record of what you've done is destroy the currency, before saying he still can't pay his bills or taxes with silver eagles, just as his time was running out and he was forced to forfeit the floor to California's Maxine Waters. As usual, Ron Paul put the focus on what he considers to be the illusory essence of fiat or paper money. This time around, though, Ron Paul did not let Bernanke respond, making it a one-way conversation. And from the very bottom of our little CFRN hearts, Ron Paul, I voted yesterday in the election. Arizona primary was yesterday. It's no secret. I didn't vote for Ron Paul. But what he had to say about the fiat currency, no greater truth. No greater truth. Good afternoon, Michael. I take it you are with us now.
I am.
Good afternoon. Good. All right. Glad to have you. I'm going to move really quick because we got a special guest. I know you have a lot to cover in regards to what transpired this morning in the live trading room, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yesterday afternoon, big news all across the everywhere was the fact that the Dow finally, after trying for a week and a half, managed to close above 13,000. All right. Now, the column we wrote last night, limping across the finish line. Our take on this was, you know, did we actually break through 13,000 or is the deed perhaps done? Now, the rejection we got this morning, once Bernanke began to speak, was relatively strong. Let me bring up another chart. That would be this chart. All right, I want to show you just really quickly. I want to run through these. Okay. Now, this is what happened as the Dow was attempting to break that 13,000 mark. It's on the blog. You can go to CFRN.net. On the right-hand side of the page, just click on any page. Click Visit Our Blog. It'll take you there. You'll see this chart. We spent 34 hours when I created this chart last night, range-bound between these two weekly trading zones, which, unusually enough, had only 30 points between them. That's the equivalent of 3 ES points. So for 34 hours, this is the futures now, not the cash index, battling it out, battling it out, battling it out. We know where we are today. I've also put up some charts on a smaller time frame using a volume-based chart that give you an idea of what that consolidation looks like at the top or bottom of a zone. See, when you're on the hourly, sometimes making that trading decision can be a little difficult. But as you break it down into the smaller time frames, or perhaps take it out of a time frame completely and look at something different, which is volume in this case, you get a better idea of how we use the weekly trading zones and our indicators. Also, big news yesterday, we rolled out our first newspaper, the CFRN E-Mini Daily Futures. Now, this thing is packed with, you'll get a new edition every day if you subscribe. It's brand new, just rolled it out yesterday. It includes everything I find cool and clever around the internet. Yep, it's as if you were peering over my shoulder as I surf the net in my own free time. You'll see what I see. I pick up bits and pieces along the way as I go. What I tweet, the people I follow, what they tweet, what's really important. You'll find it all here, one spot. And you'll be able to go to the blog tonight and you'll be able to subscribe. The toolbar. It's already gone out. People are installing it, enjoying it, having fun with it. Now, from the toolbar, look right up here. You can read our daily newspaper, follow us on Google+, read our latest article on Seeking Alpha, along with all of the other benefits that I showed you yesterday. So tonight, the links will be out on the blog for you to get that toolbar installed and rocking and rolling on your very own desktop, because that is how we roll. All right, Michael, I'm going to go ahead and pass the camera to you, camera all right. Crew.
All right, that sounds good.
The charts.
Here we go.
Can I get you anything else? A little iced tea?
Nope, I'm good. Just all I needed was the charts, really. That's it. We're just looking for the charts. All right, you guys should be looking at my charts right now. I'm going to slide this over here for right now. And I'll go over the stuff in just a moment here. Just let me organize everything so I can get to it when I'm actually recording and I'm not searching around for it. All right, so we have that one there and that one there. We're ready. And you recording. Here we go. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is February 29th, 2012. It is Wednesday. I just want to mention for everyone, if you have not taken the free trial with us, go to cfrn.net/apply, and you will get to the free trial if you have already taken the free trial. Then you should go to, or just email support@cfrn.net and explain to us why you weren't able to take advantage of the free trial the last time. All right. That said, let's move forward with the results of the day. Okay, we traded a lot of the Russell this morning. I'll show you guys the Russell. I'm not going to go over the exact trade setups on the Russell. I'm going to show you them. I'll show you where we entered. But there's stuff that I'm going to wait for the partners to get tomorrow night in the partners meeting. We took one trade on the ES this morning. I'll scroll back to that. All right, it was right here early on in the morning. It was actually right at the news event. I probably shouldn't have done it. But we took one trade there, and we got a loss on it. All right, it dropped down significantly from there. And we didn't get any more trade opportunities on the ES because we've been right inside all these zones here all this time. Okay. We took a couple of trades on the euro this morning. We ended up with break-even on the trades we took. We shorted right over here on the euro, and we got break-even on that. We shorted again here, and we got another break-even on that one. So we were break-even on the euro. Okay. We lost 2 points on the ES, but we had five contracts going, and we lost 2 points with five contracts. All right, so I'll bring that over. Now, the thing that we did a lot of trading with today was the Russell. I'll blow it up so you can see it a little bit better. Okay, I'll blow it up and display it. These were the trades we took on the Russell this morning, all during the live trading room in front of you all. These were after the live trading room, and I got to mark those in orange. Trades in yellow were trades we actually took. Trades in orange were trades that set up that we did not take. All right. Now, let me quickly just show you the results. We had 47 ticks profit per contract on the Russell this morning. So, you know, on the ES, we had 2 points lost or 8 ticks loss per contract. So we had five contracts that put us down 40 ticks on the ES. On the Russell, we had one contract with 47 ticks profit. If we had five contracts on, that would be 235 ticks profit, which would be the equivalent of $2,350. All right, $2,350 in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 trades. Now, you can see I didn't take everything out of the trades, but we shorted right here on the Russell. We shorted right here. All right, we took some profit on that trade down here. I didn't put the finish on that one, but we shorted up here. Oops. We shorted up here, and we took profit. We didn't take too much profit on that one. We took some right there. On these trades down here, for the most part, we were taking 10 ticks profit. We shorted on this one right here at the close of this bar right here. We shorted, and we took profit right there. Over here, on this bar right here, we shorted at the close of this bar right here, and we had some profit in the trade, and we moved our stop up to break even once we had the profit, and it stopped us out at break even. It actually slipped us. It slipped us 3 ticks. Over here, we shorted again right here at the close of this bar, and we took profit down here. Over here, we went long. We actually went long in the middle of this second bar right here. All right. We went long there, and we took profit up there. And we went long again over here and took profit up there. Now, since then, there was another opportunity to short right over here that we didn't take, another opportunity to go long right there that we didn't take, and another one right there that we didn't take. Okay. It's actually... No, it's not really giving us an opportunity for a short over here right now. But that was the Russell. So on the morning, we were break-even on the ES. On the Russell, we were up 47 ticks. On the ES, we were down 8 ticks. I'm sorry, we were break-even on the 6E. On the ES, we were down 8 ticks. On the Russell, I'm sorry, we were down 8 ticks per contract. On the Russell, we were up 47 ticks per contract. For those of you who don't know, the Russell is $10 a tick per contract. The ES is $12.50 a tick per contract. All right. I didn't have any trades in the YM, but trades did set up in the YM, and I will show you those right now. Okay. Let me slide that over a little bit more. Bring it up so you can view it a little better, see what's going on there. On the YM, on the 500 contract, I will point out some trades that set up this morning. There was one right here. All right, it was a long trade right here that I had missed. On the short side, there was one right here, but I didn't want to short into the weekly trading zone. But, you know, you're just looking for your bearish cross, and you pull back up to the BBC for the short right there. Over here on the long side, we had a bullish cross and a pull back to the BBC right here. Again, I let that one go. Okay. No, Chris. We had a bearish cross here with a pullback up to the BBC. We look for it to fill the window of opportunity. It didn't actually fill the whole window of opportunity there. At the time right here, I was trading the Russell, and I wasn't focused on the YM. There was another bullish cross here with a pullback to the BBC with a move up to the weekly trading zone, as you can see right there. That was what was available there on the YM this morning. This was actually during the break, 12:05. This actually just happened a few minutes ago. Okay. If I flip over to this, you can see on the four tick range, based on everything that we went over in the partners meeting last week, there were some opportunities in here as well. I didn't mark them all up. I marked some of them up. But let's just scroll back and take a look at them. All right. What time is it? There we go. Right here, this would have been considered a hiccup for a quick 68 ticks up. All right. You would have been looking to enter right there. Over here, not a hiccup because it was red. So you would have had to have waited for the rounding right here, the rounding up, and then a close above the MA1. Not a hiccup here. There was divergence, but not a hiccup because the color didn't change. Right here, this was a hiccup, or selling pressure is what we're calling that, right? You would have been looking to enter right there. Okay. Over here, there was selling pressure. You would have been looking to enter right in there, but that one would have stopped you out. For sure, that would have stopped you out. Okay. Over here, there was nothing. There was just divergence. Over here, there was divergence, and you would have been looking to enter short right there with your risk up above there. Over here, just divergence again because we had blue on the pullback. All right, so you would have been looking for the close down below and the curl down. You would have been shorting where that arrow was. Again, and this one right there. Okay, and over here, same thing. Over here, same thing. Right here, this was buying pressure, okay, because there was no red on the pullback right here. So as soon as this rolled back up, we were already on the other side. Right there was an opportunity to get into that. It did it again right here, same thing. It never turned red on the pullback. This one would have stopped you out, though, because you would have been entering right there, so you would have stopped out. Well, maybe not. Your risk should have been down below right here. Entering on that trade, your risk would have had to have been down below here. So you would have been in at 56. Your risk would have had to have been down below 43, like down at 42. And you would have survived this. So I'm not going to mark this because this is actually part of this. All right. Right here, you see it pulled back, and then it went back down without changing the direction. It actually did it twice, so right here is just one, just going to be one trade. Right here is the opposite sides of the street. We talked about that in the partners meetings. You're just looking for the down close when you got that. So right there would have been the entry. And now we're getting into the break period, but right here was the buying pressure. Never turned red on the pullback, so you would have been looking to get long right there. Your stop would have been down here, so you would have been okay with that. That's pretty much it. It brings us to where we are right now. All right. Buying pressure was right in here, so you would be long right now based on that. You'd be long right there with your risk. Would have to be down here at 976. All right. Let me just scroll down here a little bit and see who's in the audience. Ah, darn. The one person I wanted to mention something to is not in here.
Let me interject. That our special guest is just now, his town car is pulling up to the office, and they're getting him into his comfy chair and fixing his cereal. So we still got a few minutes to go.
Okay. All right.
In other words, Elvis has entered the building.
Elvis has entered the building.
He's just not ready to come on the radio just this very minute.
He's not ready for the stage just yet.
Yeah. He's in makeup.
All right. All right, so I'm going to slide. I'm actually going to minimize this a little bit right here. Okay. And all right, I'm going to slide this over, and we can look a little bit more here at the 6E. Now, in the past, I have been saying to everyone, look for the white to be to the left of the green. I changed the white line to black this morning in the live trading room on the 6E. Okay, so all the videos prior to this one, all the recap videos prior to this one, this black line would be white. I've now changed the white line to black because it was easier for people to see in the live trading room. All right. Now, as far as this trade goes this morning, it was working, it was working pretty well. Ticking off the trades like clockwork, pretty much. Right here on the short side. Right here on the long side. This was actually on the short side right here. This one didn't work. So this one right here would not have worked. All right, then it reversed and went up on the long side. So you would have been looking to get in there, probably in that area. Right here, the black is not to the left of the green, so it's not giving us anything right now. I think I did go through all these this morning, didn't I? Or did I just go through the ones that I actually put on? No, I went through them all. All right, this was a huge move down this morning. This is when, right as Bernanke started to speak, I was actually short right here. And I, once it put some profit into the trade, it came back up and got me out of break even right there. So I missed this huge move down, unfortunately. But, you know, take what we can get. And we were pretty happy to get the 47 ticks per contract on the Russell this morning. It was a good morning on the Russell, and I think tomorrow night's partners meeting should be interesting. Any of you guys out there who are not partners, who do not have, any of you guys who are out there who are not partners or who are on the fence about becoming a partner,
yeah, what's up?
Get in there before tomorrow night's meeting, okay? Send me an email at tech, T-E-C-H, at CFRN.net, and we'll give you all the information you need, all right? Anybody that's on trial is going to be getting an email today with all the information about it. But anybody that's in here that's been on the fence for any length of time, get in there. Jack, that's you. All right. That's it, guys. I'm going to stop the recording now. I forgot I was still recording. All right. The recording is done. Do you guys have any questions? Chris, you asked if that was a tradable event. Not really. No. The question was, the YM500 contract was piercing the envelope. For those of you guys who don't know what that means on the YM500 contract, with the DMT, I'll show you the DMT. CFDMT. Create new area. Right here. The envelope is blue, suggesting it's going to be a move up. When the envelope is pierced from the bottom by a green trend strength line, that suggests that you're going to have a strong move up. But by itself, it's not a tradable event. Okay. You can see over here, it pierced it, saying it was going to be a big move down. The tradable event was the pullback to the BBC, right there. Okay, that was the tradable event. This just said you're probably going to get a big move down. I hadn't noticed that this morning. Over here it pierced it, but it had already bounced off the BBC by that time. Okay, over here it pierced it, but it had already bounced off the BBC again. Over here it pierced it. Now we're into yesterday, but the tradable event was the pullback to the BBC. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to me. Are you still recording, or are we done recording?
No, I'm not. I'm done recording.
Okay. Because I know it throws a recording thing off because people can hear me and they can't hear you.
Yeah. No, it's all good.
To anyone listening to the sound of our disembodied voices wondering, what are they talking about? Okay. We probably should have covered that up front because I know we have some new people with us today who've come to hear from our special guest. On the right-hand side of any page of the website, CFRN.net, which, by the way, putting it on every page of the website, I think is very clever. The web designer says it's a fatal design flaw. Okay. Whatever. Anyway, you just, if you can't see what we're talking about, then you can't see what Michael's showing you. So listen to the sound of my disembodied voice. From the homepage of CFRN.net, on the right-hand side, there'll be a radio tower. Don't click that. Below that is a button that says Listen to Live Radio Stream. Don't click that. You're already listening to the live radio stream. Below that, there's yet another button, red, white, and blue, says Click Here. That's what you want to click. Now, when you click that button, it's going to take you to yet another page where you're going to be asked to click yet another button. This is a big, round, green one that says Watch Live Now. And in so doing, you will be registered for the entire week. In other words, you only have to go through this silly process once a week. That's why I encourage everyone to do it on Sunday night or Monday morning. And thanks to our listener, I believe Tom, who alerted me Monday morning that I had failed to change the link. But Monday mornings, you go through the registration process. It's really quick. You just need a name, email address. And then you get a link that brings you into the room where you can not only see our charts and hear our not so disembodied voices once you get in the room, but still. You can see the charts, and I think what's even, well, as important as your ability to see our charts and what we're talking about is that you're able to type in questions. Okay? You're able to participate in the discussion. You can even request to have an open mic, and you can put on your headset or you can dial in, and we're happy to dial. Most people don't want to do that. You know, they'd rather just type it in, and that's okay. But the important thing is that you can participate in the discussion. So we encourage you to do that. Just go every Monday morning, go through the registration process. You only have to do it once per week. What will happen is, if you do it on Monday, Tuesday morning, about a half an hour before the radio program, the live broadcast, you'll get an email that says, hey, show starts in 30 minutes, click here, boom, and it'll put you in the queue, and you'll be waiting for the show to start. So it's really pretty simple and effortless. Again, you only have to register once per week, so that's covered. All right, we're still waiting on David and Michael.
Yes.
So, guys, we're not pulling your leg. Michael Lakes really is here. He really is at David's office. They're just getting him set up and everything, getting him comfortable, bringing him, you know. He doesn't strike me as a coffee guy. He strikes me more as like an Earl Grey tea kind of guy, but who knows? For all I know, he's drinking chocolate milk. But they're getting him set up, getting him ready. Michael, point out on
yes.
the, if you would, sir, on the, since you got the charts, you got an hourly ES chart going?
I don't, but I will make one.
You know, I can show it when I take it. I was just going to point out that 1364 number.
Oh, well, it's right here. I don't need an hourly.
Okay.
It's right here on a 10K.
All right. That 64,
so I can point it out on the hourly, too.
That 64, guys, it's important. This week, it actually happened to be a weekly trading zone based on the math. Last week, it was not. Last week, it was just this odd area of importance that we were able to buy and sell against on a number of occasions. And then Sunday night, in fact, Friday, our final tweet on Friday was consider selling 1364 on a stop. And as Globex opened and headed lower Sunday night, that turned into a very nice trade. We then ran higher, and then when we fell out of bed this morning, it was amazing. We came right down to 1364 yet again and bounced. Bounced all the way back to the weekly trading zone at 1370. Those charts I put on the blog last night, I really encourage you to take a look at those because you've got an hourly at the top of the blog post, and then you've got volume charts below that. When you look at the hourly, you go, okay, that's pretty amazing, but what do I do with that information? When you drill down to the charts below and you look at that volume setup, you go, it starts to become a little clearer. And that's the very thing that we will attempt to convey to you, you know, if you take the free trial, help you to begin to see that. And that's the very thing that we'll attempt to teach you as you become a CFRN partner. Now, what we offer you as a CFRN partner is an education and a set of tools. There are people in the world who want more than that. There are people who want false hope, false promises, fabricated statistics, but we don't do that. Okay? You may have noticed the name of our website is a Christian Financial Radio Network, not the Financial Christian Radio Network. And I was even taken to task this morning because I'm a Christian, I should be a nonprofit organization. I don't have to pay an electric bill or an internet bill like all you other guys, or, you know, or anyone else in the world for that matter. But I should be nonprofit because I'm Christian and because I'm involved with trading. And that's a whole other story. But someone was really quite taken aback that I would not hand them a set of fabricated numbers like so many websites will do. Now, I've gone through this discussion so many times, but you know what? It's probably like something, a seasonal thing that I need to do. Anytime you go to any website or any magazine or you get an email or a snail mail or a telephone call and you're handed some statistics, okay, we're going to just assume that everybody in the world's a good guy, right? They're honest as the day is long, and whatever numbers they hand you are true and factual, okay? We're not even going to talk about the scam artist or the scallywags or the people that want to pick your pocket on the way to Wall Street. We're just going to take a leap of faith and go, everybody's honest and everybody's telling you the truth. So they go, here's the win-loss percentage ratio. Okay, what does that mean to you? Absolutely, positively, unequivocally, nothing. It means nothing. Because unless you are available and willing to take every single trade that's on that list or on that PDF file or on that spreadsheet or whatever, however they hand it to you, magnetic tape, however they convey that information to you, unless you are actually available to take the trade and took the trade, it's meaningless. That's why we trade live every morning in front of a room full of real people, warm bodies. We get stopped out. We get stopped at break even. We take profits. And we don't try to hide any of it from anybody. We do the dance every day. Good, bad, ugly, doesn't matter, because it's the truth, see? And then, not only do we do it in front of everybody that's in the room, partners, free trial people, we then come back on here to the radio broadcast, even if it was a rough day, we drag ourselves through the mud all over again and actually record it.
Yes, and record it for posterity.
And then record it and put it out on the internet so the whole world can look at it and, you know, laugh at us if they want to.
They can all look at it and say, wow, that is awful. That's awful.
So,
and you know what? Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is awful.
But that's the truth about trading. Sometimes it's awful. So while we go out of our way to be transparent, have integrity, live up to that part of our name, you know, that's in our company name. And some of you know and some of you don't know that we're now entering our 7th year of broadcast, you know, bringing comfort to the world, streaming the airwaves 24/7. It's only been in the last 18 months that we even charged for our services. Before that, we just did everything on the house. So, anyway, I don't want you to ever get misled or misunderstand who we are and what we're about, okay? We're about a community of believers who trade for a living, period. Are we a nonprofit organization? No. Do I sit on the board of directors of several nonprofit corporations? I do. Am I a founding director of an NGO in Africa? I am. But that's beside the point. I'm also a person who likes to eat. I have kids who are growing and they need, you know, new clothes on occasion. I have a wife that would like to go on a vacation again someday. And did I mention I have an electricity bill that shows up month after month after month? And I have to pay it, really, I do, if I want to stay on the air. Oh, and I got to pay the internet bill and all the other stuff. You see what I'm saying? So sometimes people get this whole thing kind of confused, and a lot of it is because of the false advertising that you stumble across on the internet. Well, yeah, but this guy, he comes right out and says he wins 90% of the time. Okay, yeah. And what was that one fellow that won like 100% of the time up there in New York City? What was his name?
I forgot. Is he the one that's...
The one they carted off to the Federal Country Club?
Yeah, I think so.
What is that guy's name? How does that escape me? Madoff. He made off with everybody's money?
Yeah, Madoff.
Yeah,
that's
there
who it
you
was.
Go.
Yeah.
He made off with everybody's money. You know, some people want the unbelievable, the unacceptable. Oh, I just got a text. I think that might be our good friend David Williams.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's probably David.
Let me see what he's got to say.
Saying it's going to be 15 minutes.
Let me see
minutes.
What he's got to say for himself. All right. Send me a number he can call in on. All right. I'm going to have to do that. Let me go over here. I'll give him my number since I am on a headset and not using my number. You know, David, I guess you're listening. I could just tell you. 1-626-544-0056. In case you're not listening, I just texted it to you. Now you got to have an access code, 501-556-673. Send. Then you're going to need the lovely audio pin. After the access code and the audio pin, please enter a hashtag, please. Also known as a pound sign. Okay, with that, I think that means David is ready to join us. Michael will be getting dialed in. Now, I want you guys to read the post I put on the blog last night that I'm going to put on. I've got a different post that I'm going to put on the blog tonight about Michael, about what a nice guy he is and just kind of a regular fellow, and that we don't bring him on the show to impress you merely because he trades a lot of contracts and to make you feel bad because you don't trade a lot of contracts. There's a whole other reason behind that, and I know David will very eloquently explain what that reason is. It has to do with a thing, crazy little thing, called hope and inspiration. So let us now pause for our station identification, and we'll be right back with David Williams from PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Wayne.
Mr. David Williams, good morning to you, sir, and welcome to this radio program.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Michael, as well, if he's there.
Yes, I am. Good morning, David.
Well, You know, we're in the middle of the week. We have a special treat today with us just moments ago. Got here just a short while back. We have Michael Trader X with us, and he is going to be – he's getting his stuff set up right now. And Dwayne, we might need a phone number for him to call in on. We may need a phone number.
David, I just texted it to you.
Or a meeting ID number that he can get in, because we do have a headset for him. Either one. Let me see. The number
just,
might actually be
I just texted you the phone number, David.
Okay, very good. And let me take a look here.
And I sent you the access code as well as the audio.
Yep, you did. Beautiful. Before we get to that, though, let's take our normal course of looking at a few of the markets, and then we'll get to Michael.
Sure.
And he's getting, like I said, he's getting settled in here, so we'll take a quick look around. First of all,
I got to say, a lot of the folks want to know what you fixed him for breakfast.
let's see, Michael, what are you having for breakfast? Cashew toasted oat cereal with lactose intolerant milk.
All right.
So there you are.
All right. We can do markets.
And he's doing that right now. So he's got his market stuff set up. He's looking. He's already done some trading today from his hotel. And we'll get him on just shortly here. But let's, in the meantime, before we get there, let's give him a few more minutes to get settled
sure.
in. And we'll talk a little bit about the markets. A couple things I'd like to say just real briefly is about the volatility has picked up, which is indicative of, you know, we have not seen this much volatility recently. It's not over yet. As we've been talking for a long time, we're looking for March to mark the top of this large advance that came off of the reflected wave bottom, the October bottom. The March top is going to be important. We're going to be sending out on Messenger Pro the reaction off of that top based sort of on a roadmap, what we think is going to occur. The move isn't over yet on the upside, as we've been talking about for a couple of months. We need to get into March before we can consider a top to be active. So for today, the fact that the market has moved up to new highs. We had 77.78 in our panel. They reached that today. And we've talked on the program, Dwayne, several times about the original forecast for 83 to be reached. I would like to see that. It's not 100% necessary, but I would like to see the 83 level touched prior to this larger top getting put in. And you can expect much larger volatility as usual. As the top starts to get formed and the new trend direction starts to get put in. So a lot of people have been shorting this on the way up, and that is unfortunate for them because they have to sit through large drawdowns. I don't teach that. I don't think that's a good idea. But people don't, you know, certain types of traders don't want to be stuck trying to figure out a place to get in. Well, the truth of the matter is that quite often after the move begins, there is large, very fast counter trend rallies that will give you wonderful entry opportunities. So the feeling that you may have that you have to absolutely get it right at the top isn't correct, because there's beautiful trades that can be taken often near the top on counter trend rallies, or even if it's substantially lower, the advance runs you up. And you can get short either utilizing your own information on when to get short, or you could use our timing methodology, reflected wave, Dwayne's method, where that would get you in. Any of these things can be utilized. And I'm just saying this to remind you that you don't have to be as aggressive as trying to sell the top. You can also, if you want, you can wait for the big advance. And the funny thing is that for many traders, once that big advance happens, enough of a down move has occurred that they're worried that that's the beginning of a new trend. And that's one of the reasons why having the roadmap information is important, because the percentages are very, very strong that the market's going to complete the roadmap amount on the downside. And any advance that occurs prior to that completion would be selling territory for a further decline. So that's one of the points I wanted to make today. The S&P bottomed today. Our lowest number in the support and resistance panel is 64 for today. They made a low at 63. They've had a nice extended advance off of that, and they're declining right now off of a minor top that they put in here intraday.
And this kind of volatility, where when we're on the radio program, which we are every day, we don't see this volatility. Normally the market has fallen asleep by this point, and there really is nothing going on for quite some time. That's because everybody who trades in the market is listening to this radio program. No, just joking. I'm going to, while we're talking, I'm going to get Michael dialed in here. I have a few other things I want to talk about regarding what we're seeing here today. But let me dial this down here. Give me 1 minute here. And there we go. Dwayne, anything you want to add to any of this that you've been seeing today with the S&P?
The only thing of real interest on the as far as the S&P, I mean, gold's a whole other story, but with the S&P, this sell-off we saw in the hour that Bernanke began to speak was stunning. I mean, it just fell apart. And the fact that it bounced at 1364, which was a key number for us last week, it wasn't a weekly trading zone, but it was a key number. It just kept coming up and coming up. And then this morning, this week, as the math would have it, 64 actually is a weekly trading zone this week. It was not last week, although we had a number of trades off of it. This morning, that huge sell-off came down, and it looked like it was the end of the world. It turned right around at 1364.
Yeah, no, it did. That's the kind of action that we start seeing prior to more important tops. Let's do this. Let's also take a look, if you don't mind, Dwayne, let's switch over to a couple other markets because we have some big moves occurring in these other markets as well. Michael's getting prepped here as well with getting online. We know gold has had a very substantial move down today, and I need to go to an outpatient clinic just to sort of get myself restabilized because we're in gold. And no, I'm just joking. So we had a big move down, and we're looking for a bottom in gold tomorrow, which is March 1st. So we're looking for a March 1st bottom in the gold market. Now, there's a little bit of a caveat to that, and that is if today were to close or tomorrow were to close below $1,706, that wouldn't change the bottom. But then I would be interested in adding to our positions if the market could get down to 1,680 or so, right in that area. So that would be about $25 lower. On the other hand, if the market does close both today and tomorrow above $1,706, then I want everybody to buy the market. Not everybody, but you know, it doesn't have to be your mother, but just anybody who's interested can buy the market based upon the March 1st bottom in gold. Okay, so any issue or any question about that, you can type it in and text it, and we'll be happy to answer that. So today's decline, as you know, we had originally told Bert a week or so back that the market was going to advance and it was going to test a very important square. A square, for people that are new, is a magnetic center in the market that will draw price to it but also reject it once price gets there. So we were talking about 1788 to 1792 that the market would get to, and then we'd be looking for a larger reaction. The market originally on February 23rd got to 1789. Bert Schlichter from Daniels Trading did take that trade and shorted the market for, I don't exactly know what he got. He can talk about that trade. And then the market advanced up and completed the 92, the 88 to 92. They did that yesterday, and they've had this. Now they've completed the more normal size reaction that we would expect off of that resistance. So this decline, although it's fast and furious, it is very, very normal behavior for the market.
And what market are you on?
I'm sorry?
Are you still on gold?
Yeah, we're still on gold.
All right, I'm sorry. I'll try to pay attention.
Okay, yeah, just it's a radio program, Christian background. There's people listening all over the world,
right,
and we talk about markets from time to time.
All right, you take notes.
Yeah, yeah, you just get a pen there. The March 1st bottom, we'll talk about this into tomorrow. Tomorrow's Thursday, and this is really good to see, although it does, you know, this is, we've been doing this for you know, our position in gold has been here for 2 years, and to see this, it isn't really as bad as I was joking before. We've been through this so many times with gold that it's just part of the longer-term strategy of holding a longer-term position, that, you know, you're going to see all kinds of stuff like this happen. So, but as I said on your radio program, we were exiting positions up near the 1788 to 92. We took off about 4% of our position again, and the reason we do that is because we like to get out on the upside, because those are areas that the market, on these squares and other areas, where the market will want to potentially reverse. And so if the market does reverse, you can pat yourself on the back and say, good, we booked some, so we can live through some of this decline. We already took some off. If the market were to get through the square, as it did in soybeans, which would forecast substantially higher prices, then you can say, well, I took some off, but I still own it. See, I still have remaining positions, and I can still participate. So it gives you the best of both worlds in kind of a way, and it's very nice to be able to have that. You know, these are just little psychological tricks that I do to myself, because everybody wants to simply hold on to, thank you, everybody wants to hold on to a position in its largest size, but realistically, that's not a practical idea. When it does work, it's beautiful, and you made $1 million or whatever. When it doesn't work, which is most of the time, you would have been wiser taking part of your profits along the way up, which is why I suggest that. So let's move on here. Let's take a quick look over at the T-bond market. As you know, we talked about the Treasury bond market needed to get up to 144.13. We forecast February 28th as a top yesterday, and that if they close below that, we would see lower prices on your program. Yesterday, they did close below the 144.14. That was a short sale entry, and the bond market has declined nicely off of that level. The reason we're interested in the bond market on the short side, today the bond markets are down more than a point, is because of the larger forecast that we have for the market to go down for potentially years. So refinancing your house, refinancing your car, refinancing your life in some way is probably in order here. Anything you want to mention on the bonds yourself, Dwayne?
No, David, I defer to you on the bond, sir.
Actually, Dwayne, Mike,
okay,
Dwayne,
nope.
David.
Go ahead. Yes, Burton Schlichter.
Yeah, I pop in from time to time. if you look at the, well, you got a little different picture than I do on the bond, but
Are you in March?
Yeah, I am.
We are in March, yeah.
And by the way, first notice date is today for March. So, you know, if you're going to trade this, start looking at June. So that would be point number one.
Mm-hmm.
But number two is, I'm looking at the daily chart yesterday. Mine's a little bit different than yours, but I got a nice little, if you get a forecast like this from David and you're waiting for a confirmation, then use your technical indicators as kind of a starting point. And on my daily stuff, I actually had some nice dojis appear. So
now this is a Globex chart, Bert. For whatever
okay,
that's
maybe
worth.
That's why.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why. But my point was is that, you know, when you listen to David, you know, don't hesitate to use your own work. You know, it could be easy stuff like candlesticks or trend lines and stuff like that to qualify what David's forecasting. So my point was that.
Well, this is a very nice reversal candle right here. I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even just that observation there, that would be a clue to say, hey, you know what? I could probably sell within the range. A stop over the high would be in order.
Right there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so consider that when you're listening to David and you're taking notes on the radio. All right, so my point was, look at June bonds. My second point is look at technical stuff on your own personal work to give you some indication of confirmation that David is, you know, shooting in the right direction, I guess. And I'll shut up now.
Hey, you know, since our broker, Burton Schlichter, from Daniel's Trading, is on the line with us, this would be an appropriate time to give a shout-out to our new friend we made yesterday, David, in Santa Catarina, Brazil. Bert, you're going to be so jealous, brother. How much snow you got on the ground?
Zero.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'll be too jealous. This guy's a broker, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's summertime right now in Brazil. And so he goes down and he surfs and he does his broker thing, like from his laptop, sitting there with his toes in the sand, watching the waves.
Jeez.
That's just not right.
Yeah, that's not right. I'm glued to my screen, watching markets. I get up in the middle of the night. I guess I'm at the junkie status.
He did say, David, I hope you're listening. If he was listening to the show yesterday, and then he and I got involved in a chat after the show. He said the broker thing, it's kind of like a lot of work, you know. And then he's considering winding that
there,
part. There he is,
there
right
he
there.
Is.
He just
Bob
logged
him.
In.
Oh,
let me see if I can. As soon as he types something in, I'll bring him up on the screen here. Okay. And he's going to really just focus more, I think, on trading. But he invited all of us to come. He said, "Mi casa, su casa. You guys come down to Brazil, hang out with me." And boy, now there's something to shoot for. Let's go broadcast live from the beach in Brazil.
I don't think we'd leave.
That'd be tough. I need to be miserable. I need snow, rain,
yeah.
Traffic.
We need to have three or four different seasons.
Yeah.
Mix them all up day by day.
Yeah.
Last week it was 65 degrees here. It's supposed to snow tonight.
Yeah. I like misery.
Now, David, we know you're there. I'm waiting for you to type something
right
in the chat.
I'm right here, and I'm just so we went over that. Then we talked about the bond market. We're just going that now. Bert just told everybody that we're rolling over. But if you're in the bond market based on the setup from yesterday that we talked about for the short side, just hold that for a little bit longer here. Or I had suggested earlier that some of the positions get taken off. We weren't on the radio at the time, but you might want to book something. At this point, just to, if you are in this trade, some of our institutional people are in this trade based on this. It was a very clean, easy to see setup. The euro, same thing. We had forecast that the euro would top on February 24th, and that as long as the market continued to close, worst case, below 134.71, that the euro would move lower. On the Globex overnight, they did spike slightly above that to 134.87. They then had a very strong reversal, and as usual, as it is with reflected wave, we'd be looking for a multi-day decline off of this position, which we've had multi-day so far, but the decline is starting to get underway now. if anybody is short in the euro based upon yesterday's forecast, I would like to see you exit some anywhere around the current position that we're in all the way down to 133.31. So I would like to book some here, though, because I want to see the market. We're very close to 133.67, a figure that I'd like to see them close below today. If they close above that, then I would be more hesitant to hold this position for longer period of time. I'd like to see them close below that 133.67. The initial forecast for the decline off the 134.88 top that was made on the 24th was for a decline to 133.69. And so worst case, I want to see them below 69 today. If they close below that, that does indicate lower prices coming, and we'll get some larger move out of this. So that'd be nice to see. Let's see. I'm trying to bang through these quickly so we can get on. the crude oil market has continued to decline off of their top. We didn't have any forecast for this, but I do want to say that similar to gold, I'm looking for a bottom in crude oil on March 1st. That's tomorrow, plus or minus one day. So the crude oil market is very, very good for trading. It does require overnight positions unless you're just going to day trade it. But the bigger money is made, I believe, in spite of the fact that I have Michael here and in spite of the fact that he does a lot of his trading intraday, the really big money is made in longer-term positions. He also holds longer-term positions. He'll talk about that. But unless you're trading in really large size, you know, the bigger money is made in longer-term positions. Silver also was down today substantially, very similar to gold setup. I think there's anything else I wanted to cover. the other thing real quick, and we'll move on here, is we talked about soybeans. This is soybeans originally was going to go to test their important level, $12.76. If they could close above that, we suggested that people go long for a sizable advance up to a minimum of $13.08. They're still advancing off that, and today we've gotten up to about 13.24. Really nice move. I would have liked to have been in that myself, but I just play a day trader on TV. I'm not actually one. No, I'm just joking. we just didn't get in it for whatever reason. So there we go. Now, having said all that, sitting next to me right now in my office after a great deal of tribulation in getting this particular guy here is who we call Trader X, Michael X. Michael has been a customer of Messenger Pro for a number of years, maybe 4 years, something, 3 years, something like that, maybe longer. And he has he actually attended our Reflected Wave seminar as a favor. He had learned Reflected Wave years ago directly from me, but he came out to the seminar because I wanted him to be there and have people meet him. That was last year. At some point, we may be able to talk him into coming to another one for people to meet him as well. So he is here, and I'm going to have him. Dwayne, I'm sure you have some questions you may want to ask him, but we caught the bird. He's right here, and before he gets up and goes anywhere, I want him to come on the radio. So without further ado, let's all say good morning to Michael, Trader X, and welcome to the program, Michael.
Hey, Dwayne, how you doing?
Hey, Michael, good to have you back with us.
That's right, great to be back.
We've been patiently waiting.
Now, Dwayne, if you want, I'd be very happy to ask him questions, or if you have questions from the listeners.
Would.
And if the listeners are listening, I suggest you text your questions now, quickly, because this may not last as long as you want it to because of market conditions start changing. He doesn't care about anything but trading. So if you're going to ask questions, let's get them in now. And we'll go from there. If you want, I can ask some.
All right,
you
yeah, David, you can ask him some questions. Michael, again, it's just good to have you with us.
Right,
David, you can be the Q man. We'll let him be the A man.
Okay.
And
Michael, where do you shop for your clothes? What kind of clothes? Well, I mean, everybody wants to know. No, I'm just joking. Okay, here's some of the questions that we get a lot. We get them in emails. Other people have asked it on your program as well. One of the key things about Michael is he trades in enormous size, and everyone has asked the question before, and we'll ask it again. Why do you trade in such size? How did you get to the point where you trade in this size? And can you talk about the process getting from being a one or two lot trader, if you were ever that, to where you are now? And you can talk a little about where you are now. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, I started out trading small. I started out trading equities, trading about 200 to 300, 500 shares at a time, and I grew my size over time, and then made some decent money in equities and started trading in many futures. Pretty big at the beginning, did well. I think we talked about this before, did well in the first few weeks or month. Was probably trading 100 lots, and then after about a few weeks, things turned for the worse. And I had to go through a big learning curve, and I had to bring my size way down. And I just told myself I'd trade small like I did in equities until I could build my size back up to where I was comfortable. And over the years, I actually went down to where I was trading a few lots, 5 lots maybe, per trade. And then built my size up over the last 5 to 7 years to the current size I'm trading now. And I think today I've done about 4,000 contracts. Market's not as volatile, so I'm not doing near as many contracts. But 4,000 is pretty decent size.
Yeah. Michael, when I first met you, if you don't mind, when I first met you several, 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it was, you came to our office, you traded here for a week, and you were then averaging about 1,000 contracts a day.
That's right.
And then over a couple of years' time, you jumped from 1,000 to, in some cases, as much as 25,000 in a single day. What happened in that time period from the 1,000 to the 10 and the 15 and the 20? what ungodly, unholy thing took you from that size? I used to think 1,000 was a lot, and now I'd laugh at that.
I guess it became more profitable in the market, the volatility of the market. The market enabled me to be able to move that kind of size in and out. The swings were so big. I think in 08, we had many days where 3 to 5% swings in a day on the S&P, which is just insane. But with that type of move, you can trade a lot of contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So, the volatility was such that you could make a lot of money mm-hmm. in that period. So naturally, when I'm making more money, I seem to press my bets more, especially if I see really good setups. Mm-hmm. Your support resistance panels have great support resistance numbers on them. And so I think when the market gets stretched and it goes into these support and resistance numbers, and you're up and you have a nice gain, I tend to really leverage my position up in using the stops, obviously using tight stops. And mm-hmm. during that period, it just worked out that the market was getting stretched and into the support and resistance levels, and I was able to leverage up more contracts.
Were you surprised at your own success in this? I mean, did you say to yourself, hey, I'm in a different world now because, I was doing it at this level, then I was at 1,000, and now was there a recognition that helped propel you further? Or does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. No, I never think about it that way because I know one very important thing in the markets, and it can humble you very quickly. I never think that, you're getting, I'm getting too big or I'm that good or whatever. Just, you're always on the edge of your seat and just hope that it's going to continue. So it's definitely, the markets are, I don't know how you put it, but markets, they're dangerous and you really can't ever predict. It seems like you're always not sure about your position, but you can just take,
Risk.
So you have to take risk and you have to just have confidence in the things that things have been working as you've done so well, calling markets and bonds, euro, S&P, you have great levels and you have conviction. Do you necessarily know for sure that it's going to stop there? No, you never know, but,
The probability
is there, but I think if you always have in the back of your mind, you never really know, mm-hmm. You won't get too hurt and you'll curtail your size, with that in mind. And then eventually you build confidence that way. It's still, I never know. And I do put on some big positions, but I still never know. And I'm very, cautious with my stops. I never just leave positions out
there. Can I ask you this? Do you feel that your larger positions, when you have a day where you're putting on a much larger position based on a top or a bottom, are there better trades than others for you, or is everything the same? Do you say to yourself, this is really a great setup?
No, they're definitely better trades.
Higher probability setups.
They're definitely higher probability trades, always.
Okay.
I mean, of course, it's probably just better to sit back and wait for those, but when you're trading all the time, sometimes you want to take some trades in the middle of the range, which I highly do not recommend.
Okay.
But, I'm a trader, and so what I do, I sit here all day long, and I'm looking for trades, and sometimes you see trades that aren't as high probability, and I don't put as much size on, so I'll definitely scale way back.
Let me ask you this. Is it possible that you overtrade? Are you an overtrader? Do you feel like you have some of that going on?
I think definitely that's one of my problems, is I do overtrade.
Okay. If I come to your house and take a shower, will I be sort of damping myself towel dry with a towel made out of $100 bills? Is that kind of how your towels look?
No.
Just curious if I ever do that out there.
No, my towels.
Are they just regular cloth, or are they just, because I could see that they might be made out of something
more I'm expensive.
But, okay, now you're blushing. What kind of technical analysis do you use in the market? Let's say, you're looking at the market. What are you doing? What are you looking for? What do you use?
I use a lot of things you've taught me.
Now I'm blushing.
And, I use candlestick charts, support and resistance on the charts, reflective wave, support and resistance you've taught me to look at. Other things I look, I have some moving averages. That moving averages are definitely lagging, but I definitely look at the mm-hmm. steepness of the moving averages and, how steep they are.
Mm-hmm.
and look at, you know, I look at daily. I start with daily, weekly, looking at the trend, mm-hmm. and then I break them down to, as you know, I've done with you. If you've shown me what you've done, you know, 120-minute charts all the way down, 240-minute charts all the way down to, you know, a 5-minute chart. But I mainly look at, I think, the 30-minute chart mm-hmm. and up. I mainly look at a bit larger time frames, mm-hmm. And I couple that with a reflective wave. I'm sorry, hold on one second. Let me check this out.
Go ahead.
And I'll also, you know, I trade, as everyone knows, I've talked about before, I trade a lot of news. And I read a lot. I read about what's going on in the markets and, you know, overseas markets and what's the hot story of the day. And I kind of use that sentiment with, you know, whatever's happening on the charts. So,
right.
If there's some really bad news out and we've had this huge run up, I'll be more apt to put on a lot more size on the sell side and shorting the market. If, you know, we have a pullback and news isn't bad and news flow is pretty good, then I'll find a good support level or try and find a decent support level, and I'll put on a lot of size if mm-hmm. we don't have any, you know, bad news, seriously bad news floating around out there overseas or here.
Well, that's all we've had, actually, is serious bad news floating out overseas.
Well, I mean, not of lately. I mean, probably the last, you know, month and a half, or at least this year, we've had actually pretty decent news and very tame news on, mm-hmm. you know, Greece, whatnot, the Eurozone. And we've had better economic numbers, per se. We had a good jobs number in February. So just like the jobs number, for instance, I would take that as a trade I had a good trade on that after a big job summer like that, and a big surprise and a mm-hmm. huge move up, you know, of course I start looking at the charts, you start looking at reflective wave pullbacks more, mm-hmm. To give you a little, you know, better indication or higher probability trade.
When the turn's gonna occur.
When you have something that strong of a move with that good of news that wasn't really factored in, it's hard to really break down from those levels. Mm-hmm. And we haven't. We haven't even filled that gap from the jobs report. So mm-hmm. those things I think are very important in the market, and it's how I think I've done well over last, you know, many years I'll take a news event like that or the market sentiment from that, and then I'll apply that with or couple that with the charts.
Yes.
And try and stay focused that way. Then, I mean, if we get stretched from that area, that was around 1320 in the S&P. So we go up 20, 30 points, 40 points. Then I start looking for some maybe sell because we might be a little exhausted, and look at the charts for a resistance level, look for a reflective wave tops, and short, and, you know, and put on some short trades.
Okay. Michael, do you factor in?
Go ahead.
Do you factor in volume at all in your trading?
No, not necessarily. I mean, if after this big run, if we were to see a big blow off top with massive volume at the top of a range, yes, I would look at that and I would sell against that until that high was taken out. But I haven't seen that yet.
He's talking about the big top here, potentially.
Yeah, top
in March,
or bottom, same thing. I mean, if you look at a big bottom, you have a big run in the market, whatever it's 50, 100 points, and all of a sudden the last day you get this massive selling in or a spike down. I usually use that as my bottom, and I'll start trading long from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. It's usually like a news event like today. I mean, we had the LTRO come out, and we had Bernanke come out, and we had a little mini spike up after the LTRO up to that 77.25.
Mm-hmm.
So I shorted that just because everyone's waiting for this news to come out. We've run up so much.
Kind of a buy the rumor, sell the facts.
Yeah, kind of like your typical trade, and sell the fact, and we're up into the 70-80 area. David has some big resistance at 83-85 area, so we're pretty close to that. I'll usually jump on those a little early if I see that kind of market behavior. So we had, you know, run up. We've been strong every day, but we haven't been able to really break out this 1373.50 mm-hmm. high, which was last year's E-mini high, and we haven't been able to really break out of that. You saw the euro start going down today, so that gave me the impetus to go in there and short a pretty decent amount this morning.
So had the market this morning moved higher, let's say it opened up, you know, and did the 77, 78, which you knew about those numbers, moved higher, you would have held for a test potentially of 83?
Yes. I would have probably held and put on a lot of size at around
near that number.
Level.
Okay.
Yes. And then my stops would have been pretty tight up by that because it shouldn't be stretched, get that stretched without a pullback.
Right. Okay, so I got two questions. First, can you loan me $50? Would that be
something? Of course.
Okay, that'd be great.
I'll give you $50.
I appreciate that. And the other is, could you tell us a little bit about the downside, the days where you have trouble, you're not on the right side of the market, you've gotten something wrong? How far will you let that go? Will you stop trading midday and say, this is just not my day? How do you handle the downside, which is inevitable, and of course, I consider you very aggressive as a trader. I do. And I mean, at least under some conditions, not at all times, but how do you handle those types of days? Psychologically, there's a lot of money on the line. You're going to have to live through that at some point. What's going through your head?
Well, I mean, I'm a pretty aggressive trader, but I also will take my losses relatively quickly. If I'm getting in, you know, I've fought this uptrend a little bit. So at some, you know, sometimes, and I think, you know, people that are close to me, that you know, Bruce, they know that I've fought this a little bit, but I'll get out and I'll take my hits, and then I'll, you know, regroup and either try and buy a pullback or I'll wait for a higher move into resistance, but I'm not trying to just continually keep shorting and holding and holding and hope it comes back. I mean, I always get out or take a loss at some point. So taking losses is not bad. You always have to define your risk, and you have to take your loss. I think if you can take a loss, you'll be successful in this business. If you can't, and you want to keep on fighting it, at some point you have to say,
they're going to take you out on a
structure. They're going to take you out. I shorted this resistance. It's just not working. You know, stop and just reevaluate. Of course, you want to short the next one because you think that's going to be the next one that pulls back from it. I would usually, when I get in that position, I'll wait for the market to get much more extended. If at least, you know, 10 or 20 more points up before I go in and short, but it has to be at some level of resistance. But yes, I do get stubborn sometimes and I think everybody does.
No, they do. I think people want to know because they know that you are trading in size, that you've been successful at it. They also want to know what the downside is and what's it like on a bad day and how you manage bad periods and all that stuff. And it's clear enough. I mean, you will define a spot where you will get out. You're not going to hold the thing forever, and you're not going to just hold and hope because you know that will end up in a disaster.
And you try not to dwell on it. You try just to move on and that just comes with, you know, time and a little experience, but the best thing to do is, you know, you're wrong. If you're wrong, there's nothing you can do about it. You just have to go back and look at the charts and try and find another trade and put that trade on. Of course, there's always that, you know, in the back of your mind that, am I going to just lose 10 trades in a row?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, usually if you look at that, if you look at market patterns, unless the market's just going up, you know, every day 10 points and never pulling back,
you're going to get something at some point.
Because this market's pretty strong. Look at 1320 after the Jaws came out.
Look at the daily chart here from the third. I mean, look at this movement just constantly.
It's pretty straight up, but there are little pullbacks in there. So if you look at a chart like that, like you're looking at right now, you have the daily chart up. Let's see.
This is January 3rd here. Right.
January 3rd, you know, we ran up to 42 and pulled back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was so look at the last reaction low to that high. How many points is that?
It's enough for you to trade, that's for sure.
Sure. So,
do you trade on you holding overnight positions?
Yes, I do. I do hold.
Are you more a day trader or more an overnighter?
I trade a lot more intraday
than you do overnight.
I do them right.
Okay.
Because the risk, you know, you can get the market, I guess the Globex market is very thin.
It is, and so it can go places that it might not normally go.
Right. It does go places where it might not normally go.
Right.
And it's thin, and you can run your stops a lot, and if you're trading a lot of size, it's not fun to get stopped out when you have, if you have 500,000 contracts on overnight,
they can
move it 3 or 4 points when it hits your stop.
Yeah.
So,
that'll, right.
Yeah. But intraday, that can't happen. Usually, if you get hit on your stop, most you can lose on a lot of sizes of a tick or two. Overnight, you can lose several points.
Okay. Do you have any questions from your listeners, Dwayne?
Oh, I've got tons of them.
Oh, let's ask him real quick because I don't want to take too much time here for him because he's watching markets. It is quiet, though. Let's get some of them in there and see if he can help them.
Are you going to come back?
I just want to say this. Michael doesn't consider himself a teacher or a advisor or anything like that. He's quiet. He's to himself. But that's why I think this is a rare opportunity for somebody to ask some questions and get some direct answers from somebody who's really doing this in these size levels. So go ahead.
Michael, will you be able to visit with us again on Thursday and Friday?
Yes, possibly, yeah. If the market's pretty, if it's not too busy, sure.
Okay. All right. We'll look forward to that. One of the common questions is how many points, because we don't want to get into finances and ask you how much money you make a day, because that seemed rather crude. On average,
sure.
How many points would you say you net in the markets on a daily basis?
That's a tough question. Now, I used to know that answer because I ran all my numbers before. I have not in the last probably 8 months or so. But before that, I think it was an average of, 1.8 points or maybe 2.5 points.
Okay.
If you take all my volume in mm-hmm. consideration, I usually, this morning I had a trade on, I probably made about 10 points on.
Mm-hmm.
That was one trade today, but usually over the average, it's a whole lot less if you average it out.
And I really like that you're upfront with that and share that with people, because so many of traders who start out with a very small trading account and are very capable of taking 1 to 2 points a day out of the market,
right,
feel that there is no future in trading for them because they can only take 1 to 2 points a day out of the market. They're continually swing for the fences looking for the 5 points and the 10-point and the 20-point move, which continues to escape them. And so I ask you that question to give them hope and encouragement.
Well, sure. My advice, I think, from my experience, if you have a small account, I think the best way to trade is in small increments and taking small profits. That's how I did it with equities, and that's how I eventually had to do it with the E-minis. When I first started, I did really well. I first started trading the big NASDAQ contract and made a lot of money doing that, and traded the big S&P. But when I got to the electronic contract, and I was watching it all the time, It changed, but it was just a better platform because the slippage you take on the floor or the big contracts is just tremendous when you can trade the E-mini S&Ps that are based in 4-tick increments per point mm-hmm. as opposed to calling in and getting slip 1 or 2 or 3 points and 5 or 10 NASDAQ points over the phone. When I first started, that's how it was.
Right.
But going back to, your original question was, I started out really scalping all the time. And when I was trading equities, I scalped as much as I could to build my account up so I could hold for bigger gains or more points. So I definitely, that's how I started. And usually when I'm getting in a rut or doing poorly, I go back to that methodology and I go back to shorter trades, scalping more, until I build some of that confidence back and build some of that profit, the losses back or make profits. And I think that's a great question. I think that's essential to being successful if you have a small account. I think if you try and go for too much with a small account, you're going to lose a lot, and the psychological impact of that is is just too hard to get over. So it's better to try and look at taking high probability trades and scalping at least some of your position. If you're a 3-contract trader or 2-contract trader, take one off and, you know, put your stop at break even if you, if you're up, you know, 2 points or 3 points, and don't try and go for too much. I mean, if you're a larger contract trader, 3 to 5, then you can take off 2 or 3 and let 2 run. But always take something, because it's, you know, a profit. Like everyone says, you're never going to go broke taking a profit. But I would, it's essential, I think, in trading to make sure that you do not hold one small position for a massive gain, because it's, the markets gyrate so much. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to be made.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a typical fixed stop loss that you use on your ES trades, or is it based upon whatever picture the market is presenting you at the moment?
It's pretty much based upon what the market's presenting me at the moment. But on average, when I average, I usually average into position because I'm trading a lot of contracts. So when I average in that position, I do have a set stop, and it's probably no more than 3 points on my average.
Okay.
Sometimes it's less. Sometimes it's 1.5 to 2 points on my average, because I know where I want to be short or I want to be long. I know, and I kind of have in my mind already, I do not want to take it higher than this or lower than this, and I'm out. So I put my stop in, and I let myself get taken out all the time.
Michael, would it be fair to say that you know where you would be wrong in the position? You're not really fixing it on a dollar amount. You're saying, wherever I'm getting in, this is the place that would make me wrong. Is that how you think?
Okay. That's a better way.
Okay.
More precise.
Now, you go ahead, Wayne.
You mentioned something there in your answer. You said, I average into a position. And I think most people are probably familiar with scaling out of a position. Scaling in is something a little bit different. How do you know, what gives you the confidence that you're on the right track and that you want to add to that position as the market moves up or down, depending upon if you're long or short?
Well, I think what David just said was the reason, you know, when you have your reason for getting out of the trade, then you can pretty much define how soon do I want to get into this trade, because I know where my stop is. So sometimes if I think the market if I'm trying to short the market like today, and it's not going to get to, it didn't really feel like to me, it looked like it was going to get to 83, 84 today. It's been up struggling around the 73.50 level. So I'm going to start shorting it above the breakout level, which is 73 was the high from last year. So usually when the markets run to these big numbers, if they go above it, they usually will pull back to it or below it. And kind of trade around those numbers. So from my experience of knowing that, I'll say, well, you know, I might put on X amount of contracts at 73, 74, 75 with stops at above the 78, let's say, resistance. And then put some back on if it gets above that at in front of 83 or 84. I usually front run some of these bigger resistance levels. If they're not really big levels, if they're intraday levels, then I'll pretty much put my positions close to the number that I want to buy or sell against.
Okay.
I don't know if I answered your question right.
No, you did. You answered it very well. And a question here, and this is a great question. There are days when the market is just choppy. Okay, it's range bound. Do you have a particular indicator or any other method that you use to define a choppy range bound market? And if so, do you stay out of that market, or do you attempt to trade inside of that small range?
Usually I'll look at, you know, in the short time frames, if it's choppy, I'll look at reflective wave. If I usually look at the market in the first hour of trading, what's the range? I think we talked about this last time, but if the range is, let's say, 10 or 12 points, what they call a wide, if you look at, market profile, they call that a wide IB, or, you know, wide initial balance, or wide first hour trading.
Right.
Usually if the first hour trading is pretty wide, it's very hard to keep pushing up or pushing below those levels. So then I'll look at the charts and look at the shorter-term time frames, look at shorter-term reflective wave time frames, and scalp off of those levels. Now, that's what I really scalp a lot is when you have a 10-point range and then all of a sudden after the first hour it starts narrowing down even less than that, then you can just scalp off those reflective wave high and lows, or you know, find look at your short term charts and look at support and resistance and scalp until that range is, it breaks out of that range. But pretty much most of the time you can tell from the first hour trading is the most important. How wide is that range? If it's very small, it's easy to push over. It's easy to break out of those range. If it's very wide, it's very difficult to break out of a wide range. So look at our range today. What did it do after the first hour of trading? It hadn't broken out of the range, has it? But it's been in between it because the range is just very wide. And the probability of it breaking out, even if it got and took out the highs above the highs or the lows, usually won't break out that much on average.
Yeah, today was a little bit unusual. We had in that opening hour about a 5-point range. I believe, is that correct? We had lows at 72, highs up at 77 and change. So yeah, about 5
points.
What
was the high low of the first? What was the high low of the first hour?
Low 72.25, and the high 77.25.
That was the first hour.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at Globex, I guess. Now, if it, well, that's a perfect example. If it's a tight range like that, what did it do? It broke out of that range and it went down pretty substantially.
As Bernanke began to speak and Ron Paul began to thrash him, it fell hard and fast. We dropped from 74 down to 60. We dropped 10 points in the next hour.
Right.
And then once we hit that 64...
Now you have a much wider range, and after that big extension, it usually will contain... That range. Look at the high low today, 63 to 77. I mean, that's a pretty big, that's a wide range from
for recently. It is.
Yes.
For recently, it definitely is. Michael, one question. I have a question. I'd like to just shoot in here real quick. If I let you drive my new electric car, will you tell the listeners if you like it?
Yes.
Tomorrow?
I will.
Just want to see if it's really fun. And
David's been
really
ranting and raving about this new book.
Oh.
Yeah, so.
Oh, Michael,
and so
you have
tomorrow,
no idea.
If you're on the program, will you tell them, you know, say something like this? I mean, you know, I drove David Williams' new electric car, and it was really fun. Something like that?
Okay.
Would that be good?
I'm going to convert.
Okay. That's good. I just want to hear that. Please go ahead with the more important questions.
One of the less important questions. One of the questions that's really an important one, I think, Michael. When you talk about the size of stops that you use, are you using a hard stop or a mental stop?
I use a hard stop always.
Okay, please say that again, because I need everybody.
I
to
I use
hear
a
that.
Hard stop always.
Okay, guys.
I never use a mental stop.
There's no such thing as a mental stop to him.
And when I hold overnight, I always have a stop in.
And that's another always. Question. Do you trade the futures market on the Globex session?
I do.
You do?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
But same rules apply. I always have a hard stop. Because you never know you're going to wake up and Iran, you know, and Israel are at war and you're fear long and you don't have a stop. So the S&P can be down 50 points and then your account's gone. It's just not worth it.
How difficult is it for you to not be in a position?
That's pretty difficult sometimes. But
I'm sorry, let me just throw this in. That's what we're going to be working on this week a little bit, is just refining and defining his best work, because every trader has his best work and then he has other areas where he's, to be honest with you, I believe that he has some overtrading that he's doing, and that he could save that ammunition for some better setup, something like that. But everybody has that. Everybody has that thing. And Michael, it's always been important to him to be in size. That's been a big thing from the very beginning. I think that's interesting, too, because I don't know that he's addressed that today, and I know we're going to have to run here shortly, but I do want to say a couple things about this. When he started out trading, from his own explanation to me, size meant something to him even then. It was like, I want to trade really big. Is that not correct? And so can you say something about that? What was that? What do you think was forcing that? Because not everybody says that. Not everybody starts in trading and says, I want to trade really, really big. What's the story on that?
Well, I guess it was from when I first started out trading mainly equities. I was able, because of 97, 98, 99, the liquidity was so tremendous in the equity markets that you could eventually, if you're a 200 share trader to 500 share trader, you could trade 2,000 shares, and then you could trade 5,000 shares, and you could trade 10,000 shares. And I just saw how you could incrementally move up so much in the equity markets because they were so liquid. Once I started trading the E-mini S&P and saw the liquidity in the E-mini S&P, I immediately said, you know, I want to be able to trade 1,000 contracts because you could see that every level had 1,000 contracts or more. I mean, right now it's a little thin, but when I first started trading, it was very liquid. So I had that mentality of I wanted to take size into the E-mini S&P. I was going to answer one. I think Dwayne asked something before you came on, and I was going to give him an answer. I forgot what it was.
Okay.
Dwayne, do you remember your last question?
I don't.
Okay.
Before you came on, I had a question. Yeah, all I remember is asking what you have for breakfast, because David said he had got you the right cereals.
Well, listen, let's do this, because the markets are quiet now. If anybody has further questions that they want to write down or type down, he's going to be here for the remainder of the week. Is that correct?
Yes.
And we'll be, you know, he'll be available to answer those tomorrow. You can see that the answers that you're going to get, you have to think about them a little bit. They may seem, maybe it seems too easy. But, you know, the truth of the matter is that it's something that you get a feel for over time, and you somehow make it your own. And Michael has made it his own on a really large level. It's unusual. I know a lot of traders, and we deal with a lot of traders. What he's doing is highly unusual because of his size and because of his willingness to trade at those levels day in and day out. It takes a certain amount of conditioning, pain-wise, and pleasure. You know, people say, well, if I could just win, then everything would be fine. But I have news for you that even experiencing the highs of trading, of having the really big, you know, million-dollar day or whatever it is that he's doing, those have their own effect on you as well that you have to condition yourself against because they can send you through the roof and you can do a very foolish thing. Is that not correct? You know,
No, that's very true. I mean, big up days, you can have big down days as well. And the emotional swings are pretty tremendous. But, I mean, you have to just keep it in perspective that it's relative to, you know, your account size. And if you're growing your account, then you can trade larger size.
Right.
That's the way I look at it.
After a really bunch of big swings in the market, you know, a bunch of big up and down days, wouldn't it be good to have a really quiet car, like something that didn't have a piston motor, and you could just drive along, and it'd be really silent? Wouldn't that be nice?
I guess I'll find out.
Yes, you will.
David, do you know that he might not stick around the entire 3 days if you can't?
There's a possibility he's leaving today. He's getting up now, actually.
They might run me out of here pretty quick.
There's a real possibility of that. But I'm a big risk taker myself, but in a much different way, obviously.
Now, here's a question that's two final questions. We'll
go
let
ahead.
You run. And this one has popped up a number of times. Do you have a default size that you get into a trade with? Like, do you start with 50 and then work from there, or 100, or does it depend upon the market conditions?
It depends upon the market conditions. I mean, sometimes I had my default set today at 10.
Okay.
Even though I got into a lot of contracts, sometimes I'll change that and I had near the highs today. You know, I didn't get near the highs, but I had some orders staggered up there. But I had a lot of five lots. But when I'm taking off trades and I'm peeling off part of my position as the market goes down, I don't wait for like one. I don't get in a position and say, oh, it's going to go right to here, because I don't know if it's going to go to a certain spot. But I will start peeling off contracts early, especially if I have a lot of size on. So I book profit a lot as the market moves in my favor.
Okay.
So I have to change my default because of that. If I have a default at 50 or 100 contracts, I'm selling 50 or 100 at a time. When I want to get out, I'm not getting out at that increment sometimes. Sometimes I'm doing it a lot less because I want to hold a big portion of my position to a certain target, but I definitely want to peel some off and take some profits.
We've talked about this before, Duane, that whole idea of peeling off positions on the way up or on the way down and how valuable it is, especially when you have some size, et cetera. So this is territory that we've covered a lot, and it's nice to hear him confirm that because that is I think a lot of traders do that. I don't think it's anything that we're adding, but it's a good thing to remember that no matter how good the targets are, that it's a good idea to be booking things along the way to those targets. Greed will step in the way of that, and you can say, no, I know it's going there. Even if you know it's going there and subsequently you are right, you're a better trader if you took profits off along the way, because that in the end is going to be a higher probability strategy overall over time than we'll be holding for a final target. Go ahead, Wayne.
Michael, is there any point in time where when a position has not gone the way you intended that you will actually reverse and trade in the opposite direction? Or at that point, do you just get out and
actually,
step aside?
You get back to what I wanted to tell you.
Okay.
Why I'm constantly in the market. If you think about being in the market, if you're looking at the stock market, or you're looking at the E-minis and you say, I think it's going up, you should be long, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you get out of that position, why are you getting out of the position? Do you think it's going to go down, or do you think it's going to still go up? You get out because you probably think it's topped out and it's going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's called positive expectancy, right? So you have a positive expectancy of getting in your long position from point A to point B. That's your positive expectancy. Once it gets there, did your expectancy change? If it does, then you should be short.
Okay.
So I look at the market as, If I'm willing to get out of my whole position, that means I don't think it's going to go up anymore. I'm going to short it.
Okay.
And I just want to throw something in. That's interesting to me because most people don't think that way. I'm sorry, Duane. Go ahead.
Well, no. I was just going to say that I think that is that's unique, and that is what
that is
keeps
unique.
You in the market, because most people, if it actually does go from point A to point B, man, they just were so relieved.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, and
they're not getting out. Most people aren't getting out because they think the move is over. They're getting out because the urgency to take a profit has overcome their wisdom for being in the market in the first place.
Exactly.
It has nothing to do with whether or not they really thought they reached a place where the market would turn, where Michael is saying, no, actually, he's going to stay with the position in many cases, peeling along the way up until he feels – it's no longer got any steam in it, and then why would he not want to? Therefore, if he's taking that long position off, he's doing that because he thinks the move's over. Why should he then not be short? And therefore, he's almost always in the market. And so that's new. That's something we haven't heard before.
Mm-hmm. And that's certainly something for all of us to give some thought to. Well, I said I would hold it to two more questions. I think I did that. I really appreciate you being with us, Michael, and we look forward to having you with us again tomorrow and Friday for as much time as you have available.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Thanks for talking to me.
And thank you, Michael, for coming on. And so, Duane, we'll definitely finish up tomorrow with Michael, if he wants to talk. And I'm hoping that some point today I can get him, in that little electric car, so tomorrow we can talk a little bit about that, and I can just prove to all the listeners that, see, I was right. It is really neat, because I'll pay him $50 to say that, even if he doesn't like it.
Don't let him make you wear the fez, Michael, please.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay,
I'll tell you how good it is.
Yeah, he'll tell you. Listen, he drives some pretty good machinery. He drives some pretty good machinery. He came here in like a taxi. I mean, so I saw that. That was nice.
All right, guys.
Anyway, so listen, thank you for the questions, everybody. I think that's very good that people asked. You can see in the end, in the final analysis, that you have to make this stuff your own. You have to. It can be very helpful and very inspiring, and it'll be very good for us to trade with him here during the week. It's an inspiration to me to have him here because when you see the size and you see that it opens up sort of a vista for yourself, you say, you know, I really could step up here a little bit more or whatever, because you end up getting in a comfort zone. And I'm sure he gets in his comfort zones, even though he's at those large levels. Everyone sort of wants to break out of their comfort zone. So this is, you know, this will be beneficial to me. Hopefully it will be beneficial to him as well. And Dwayne will be here tomorrow. Thank you for the listeners for asking questions. I hope it was enjoyable to have him here and for waiting. And we'll see you tomorrow. We'll cover the markets, unless you have any other questions about anything me, Dwayne.
Thanks, David. And Michael, thank you very much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay, we'll see you then. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Okay, guys, that's going to wrap it up for today. If you have questions, Michael said he'll be back a little bit tomorrow and a little bit on Friday, so you can email those questions to me. Just send them to support@cfrn.net. I will attempt to get the podcast uploaded early this afternoon, so if you didn't catch it all, you'll be able to listen to it via the website. If you're an iOS guy, you got the iTunes, you got the iPhone, you got the iPad, I really encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. It makes it automatic. I know a lot of you can't participate in the show live each day as it unfolds. Some of you do listen live via the iTunes app on your iPad or your iPhone. But if you have an iPad or an iPhone, that means you also have iTunes. Even if you don't listen to this radio program via iTunes, we would very much appreciate if you would pop into the review section. Just go to iTunes, go to podcast, type in eMini, or just type in CFRN. That'll take you directly to us. Click it, and if you enjoy the show, hey, leave us a review. We appreciate it. It does a lot for us, keeps us up there in front of folks, and so it's just a few minutes out of your time, along with clicking all the other buttons we've got. Oh, my goodness. We got the Google Plus buttons. We got the Facebook like buttons. We got the retweet buttons. The shameless promotion, the shameless self-promotion never ends at CFRN. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with his mercy and with his grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions.